session number 220991, wheel 1.
Captain David Render, Reel 1, Side 1. Can you start, please, by giving me your full name and date of birth?
It's David Desmond Render, R-E-N-D-E-R. And my birth was 16th of September, 1924, in Highbury, North London. So I am, in fact, a Cockney.
And what did your family do? What did your father work
for? Well, my father was a builder. Grandfather was a printer, and my father was a builder, a self-made man. And he started work at the age of 8, believe it or not. And he learned how to do his stresses and strains in the Northern Polytechnic Holloway, and then went from strength to strength, being a builder, or converting properties, pre-war, pre-1418 war, and he was then in the 1418 war, in 1916, he was in the Somme, he got gassed and so on. He was an engineer. He laid the railway lines, which was at that time a very innovative idea, because when the shelling took place in the Somme, of course they made huge holes on both sides, and you couldn't get the men up to the front because it was very rainy and wet, and they were all ponds one on another, and if anybody fell into the ponds, the if a man stopped to pull his friend out, they would shoot him, because the point was that they would lose two men instead of one. They got this marvellous idea, therefore, of laying a railway line, a little narrow gauge railway line, and pushing the trucks up to the front. And as a matter of interest, if you want to see this, if you go to Duxford, there is actually a mock-up of the 1418 battlefield, and there, strange as it may seem, little known thing to a lot of people, are my dad's railway lines.
And how about brothers and sisters?
Yes, well, I had an elder brother, and we grew up in Totteridge, basically, here, where I am now, although we started life, of course, in Highbury, and I did, in fact, have an elder brother. There was an elder brother and a sister, and then myself in the family, but we did have an elder brother who was older than my brother, who was 5 years older than I was. But he, unfortunately, was born, stillborn, reputed to be caused by a zeppelin that came over and dropped a bomb on the other side of London and frightened the daylights out of my mother, who dropped her number one son in sympathy. But anyway... the truth was that yes, we were brought up in London, and then of course the war the peace was through to 1939, as it were, and then my brother was called up into the army. He went into the Royal Army Service Corps in 1939. And he went over to France, and when our people had to leave France, he tried to get out at Dunkirk and couldn't, but he came out at Saint-Nazaire, and he was actually on a little boat trying to get on board the Lancastria when it was sunk, and the casualties, of course, were terrific. 6,500 people or something of our soldiers went down, and my brother narrowly escaped that. They went back to the shore, unloaded his men. He had 30 drivers with him. And they went back out again to try to... Or the boat went out again to try to rescue the chaps, but all our fellas had gone down, unfortunately. And eventually he got back to England, and then he went out to the desert, and he was a desert rat in North Africa. And history repeats itself, because in point of fact, he being in the service corps was on had something like 30 lorries taking petrol up to the base dumps, presumably where our A and B echelon or of the Sherwood Rangers would collect their fuel from. He tells me told me the story rather that rather like my father in 1916 would lay his railway lines, and all of a sudden the whistles would blow and down would come in a huge stonk, and they'd be ducking and diving out of the way of it, and suddenly they'd look round and there were their railway lines all sticking up like fingers through the air, into the air, and they were then instructed to hurry up and get on and relay them, which of course was a bit of a disaster. History repeated itself because my brother told me that they would go up the desert with their 30, with his 30 trucks. He was a lieutenant then, and suddenly the whistles would blow, and out of the sky would come a Messerschmitt 109 or a Stuka, and because the trucks had all got the petrol on in flimsies, there was a petrol haze floating behind them, and all the German planes had to do was just to fire about five rounds of tracer into it, and the whole lot went woomph. Well, our chaps got very used to this, and what they did was they had a 1500 weight to one side of the, on the, in the desert, and as soon as the whistles blew that the plane was in the vicinity, they would halt the trucks and run straight to the 1500 weight and jump on the truck and literally turn around and go back for another lot. And he told me that on one occasion, one day, he lost seven convoys like that, did my brother. So that was rather expensive.
Can we go back a bit, and in terms of your education, where were you?
Sure. I was educated at Highgate School. I was not very happy at Highgate, unfortunately, but we were evacuated to Westward Ho. I was in the junior school, and then in 1939, I was evacuated out to Westward Ho. And when I came back on a holiday, I was only there for about a year, I suppose, and when we came back on a holiday, I found that London was being bombed and all the rest of it in 1940, and I decided, much against my father's iron Victorian will, that I was not going back to school again. I wanted to stay with them. And as I say, much against his will, because he said, no, you don't, you go to school, and because I was 16. However, I didn't go back, and I went to the same polytechnic that my father had been to in Holloway Road, and I did a building course because I was going to follow his footsteps. In those days, of course, whilst it's popular to ridicule the fire watchers and people like that, we all did fire watching at least three nights a week. That would be all night, I might tell you. I did that around here in Totteridge. And also, of course, in the daytime, when I wasn't at the Polytechnic, I had to, my father would wanted me to work, and we did in the holiday time what they called first aid work in Islington, which was to repair broken glass windows with plastic and put on slates on the roof and so on. And that was, if you like, work experience for me.
Once again, going back just a bit, what are your recollections of the build-up and the declaration of war? Can you say that?
Yes. In fact, I was in 1938. I was at Highgate School, and a friend of mine said, "Would I like to go with him and his father in his car to have a little holiday on the Broads?" And this chap, we duly did this, and this chap, however, the father, was in the War Office, and he was on tenterhooks the whole time to get to the phone. And suddenly he came back and said to us, right, that's it, we've all got to go back, because the war's on in 1938, war's been declared. So we were all a bit excited about this. Anyway, we came back, and of course it was held off by Mr. Chamberlain. Also, of course, the other effect that we found was that there were some funny people were brought into school. They were, in fact, German Jewish boys. And when I say funny, they were very different to us. There was no doubt about it. They were very sort of hard, nasty, but very sort of almost aggressive type chaps. That's what I remember them. Quite a few of them we had. We couldn't understand what it was all about, really. None of my friends really took that in, but of course we realise now that what it was all about. But that was our first inkling of something odd happening, if you ask me that question, yes.
And how did you respond to the outbreak of war?
Well, the outbreak of war, we were actually over at Enfield at a market. It was my father's want and my mother's want to take us over to a market that used to take place on Saturday afternoons. And we'd go over there and have a little look around the market. Sometimes, of course, we'd go to other markets. And as my father was a builder, he would sell his houses with lampshades in and the fire burning in the grate and that sort of thing. And he used to get myself and he and sometimes my sister, who's a little bit older than I was, we'd go round the market and buy up the lampshade, or tell him where the lampshades were, and then he'd buy them, the last lampshades, second hand. So we were over at one of these markets at Enfield, and all of a sudden there was a great panic because the sirens went, and I remember we all sort of had to rush off and go down into an underground shelter thing. And well, it was all a bit of a surprise, really. And we, mind you, personally speaking, it didn't sort of worry me, but then I didn't understand what was going on half the time. Then we came out, nothing happened. And of course, I suppose that was the phony war, because nobody really, we couldn't find anything wrong at all. We couldn't understand what it was all about. So that was the first start of it. Then, of course, came the question that I went away to school, as I said earlier, and found that when I came back, though, there were bombs dropping around here. And it was all taking on a very different aspect. And we were very concerned about my brother because we didn't hear anything from him and so on. And then, of course, when I actually went to the Polytechnic, there were many occasions when we'd go down to the Polytechnic and or be at school there, and all of a sudden they'd ring bells, and the everybody was supposed to go down and sit in the shelters, completely dislocating the whole operation of the teaching process. So consequently, we didn't learn very much in the first year, I must admit. There were about nine of us, all builders' sons, young fellas, about 16, 17. And on one occasion, for instance, I had a little Austin 7 that I drove, a 1926 car, and I used to take two of my friends from round here, a fellow called Jeffrey Wellsman, who subsequently became a glider pilot, and there was, unfortunately, he got killed. His body was washed up on the shore of Holland when they did the Rhine crossing. And there was another chap who came with us. He was okay though. And we went down to the school, the Polytechnic, one morning, and there was a furniture factory opposite called Jelks in Holloway Road, and the whole thing was on fire, and the firemen were standing there trying to put the fire out, and they'd been there all night long, and they were all very tired indeed. Their eyes were literally hanging out, sort of thing. And so I said, well, come on chaps, let's go and see if they want a hand. So we pulled up the old car and galloped across to these chaps and said, do you want a hand? And they said, yes, we jolly well do. So we then got on the fire hoses and helped to put the fires out. We spent all day doing that instead of the Polytechnic. So you can imagine that at the end of the 12 months that we were at the Polytechnic, none of us got through the exams. In fact, I got naught out of 100 for mensuration.
And did you know at this stage that you were going to go into the army? Had you made your mind?
No, not at all. On my 18th birthday, I mean, of course, don't forget, it was very much in our minds that other people, our elder brothers, were in the army and all the rest of it. And it's interesting you should ask that question, really, because it leads one into saying, why does one go into the army, you see? Well, it was totally based on patriotism, really, and on the fact that we were fed on the information that these nasty Germans were out to come and occupy us, and we didn't like that idea at all. Also, of course, it was, if you like, the thing to do, to be in the army. I think that if you said to me, why did I go into tanks? Well, it was because of a particular book that I've got over there in that bookshelf that I used to look at, and it was about tanks. And that gave me the idea, I think I'd like to be in a tank, and that was about it.
So at no stage did you think you were going to join the Navy or the Air Force? Or?
No, I knew my brother was in the Army, of course, and my father had been in the Army, and we had one or two good friends about the place who'd been in the Army, and they talked about it to a degree. My mother and father were very neutral. They didn't really say I couldn't go into it, but my mother was very upset when I did go in, actually, at 18. She thought that was a bit unnecessary, because she said, well, we've already got Jeff there, why do we have to have you? Jeff being my brother. But that wasn't anything to do with me. My father certainly didn't dissuade me, no.
So you joined up at the age of 18?
18, yeah, on my 18th birthday.
The first opportunity.
Yeah. Mm.
And
we all went. There were a number of us in the Polytechnic, nine of us, and out of the nine, five of us came back.
Did you all join up at the same time?
We all joined up. We went round to the... there was a recruiting office in Seven Sisters Road, Holloway. And one lunchtime, we just went. I said, well, I'm going to join. I'm 18 today. And I said, I'm going to join up today. So we said, the others said, right, oh, well, if you will, we will. So we all went and we all signed up.
And what happened then, once you'd signed on the dotted line?
Well, nothing for about... that was in the September, and then I got a notification in the October that I was required in November. So I went and just got on the train and went to Bovington in the November, early part of November.
So you reported to Bovington in November 42?
Yes.
Mm. And there, what happened?
Well, there, when we got there, we were in the primary training wing, they called it the PTW, and that was on the top of the hill, which is where the Bovington tank training regiments were. There was the 52nd training regiment, which seemed to have a lot of older chaps in it, and then at the bottom of the hill was the 58th training regiment, which was the young soldiers battalion, young soldiers regiment, and but we were at the top of the hill in the primary training wing, which was a series of old army huts and camp, and they were all chaps who were there for six. We were only in there for 6 weeks, and you trained there to just be able to drill and behave yourself. We didn't have berries. We had ordinary 4.5 caps, we were really the lowest of the low, and they treated us pretty roughly, not too badly, but it was quite a rough do. And it was interesting, really, because we were pitchforked in with a lot of people I'd never even heard of or met before. There were rough diamonds and very sort of upmarket people, all pitchforked into one another. The rough diamonds had a terrible time of it. From my point of view, and another bloke, having been in this chap Ian Spottiswood I was talking about, particularly I remember him, having been to a public school and boarding at public school, we didn't find it hard at all. And funnily enough, I compared notes with my brother a long time afterwards and asked him how he got on with it. He said exactly the same thing, that because he'd had a hard training at school as a boarder, it was comparatively acceptable, quite easy to cope with. But of course, I have to say that for a lot of the chaps who, had a more basic education, if I may put it that way, they couldn't take it at all. It was a terrible hardship to have their hair cut. We didn't mind having a haircut at all. It was a terrible hardship to have to get up regularly at 6 o'clock in the morning. We didn't mind about things like that. It was a terrible hardship if you had to have bacon instead of or fish, if you like, instead of bacon. These sort of basic things, which we really didn't think much about. They didn't like porridge, I remember. They'd never had porridge before, and whereas we'd had porridge at school, you see. And the discipline of having to be out on parade immediately when they said go was a big, big strain for them. The discipline was easy to us coming from public school, but very difficult for the other people.
So you didn't regret your decision to join the army as a result of that experience?
Oh, no, we were enthusiastic about it. We were a bit surprised at the rough treatment that we got, but at that stage we thought that was pretty rough. But in fact, as I'll tell you in a moment, it was nothing as compared to what we got when we got down to the 58th Training Regiment.
When you say rough, what do you mean by that?
Well, shouted at and bullied and generally told to hurry up and get a move on, and you're a horrible little man and stand up straight and all this sort of stuff and don't move and all that sort of thing, you see. I mean, the general sort of bullying.
So apart from drill, what else did they teach you in that initial period?
Well, it was how to clean a rifle and how a rifle works, and also mainly how to fold your kit in the bedroom, you know, in the beds and so on. It was spent, most of the time was spent marching up and down the parade ground. And then we did PT, physical training, and we had to go on runs. But we didn't do anything to do with tanks at all. Nothing. It was purely infantry training. We didn't have to dig holes or... I can't really remember anything from that particular period to do with... anything other than the person, the individual.
And at the end of 6 weeks, what happened then? What happened next?
Well, then at the end of 6 weeks, they then said, you are now going to go down to the 58th TR, 58th Young Soldiers Battalion. Or not battalion, Young Soldiers Regiment. And that was at the bottom of the hill, and then we were then put into troops, and we were in 44 troop, I remember, and there would be about 40 chaps in 44 troop. They were all young soldiers, all chaps of 19, and or 18. I was 18 then. In fact, looking back on it, it was quite one of the most brutal times of my life. The sergeants and the sergeant major, RSM for instance, were totally feared. The corporals were not much better. Basically, the NCOs ran the thing, and we just occasionally saw an officer, not very often, hardly ever, but it was basically run by them. For instance, to illustrate what I'm talking about, we would be given a 36-hour leave, 36 hours to get down to Wool Station, which was at least half an hour away, get on the train, come home to London, get on the tube, come out to Totteridge, be picked up by my parents, go home to just up the road here, and then get back on the tube, and then go up to London and go back on the train, and then the train would arrive literally within a second or two of half an hour, and you had to run to get in by midnight. And if you were a minute after midnight, Sergeant Hayter, his name was, he was the sergeant who was in charge of the guard room, and he ruled it like a total martinet. He was an absolute, I mean, excuse my French, but he was a real gentleman without a father.
Did you feel that this was brutality with a purpose as part of your training? Or?
We didn't understand it at all. I mean, if you want me to tell you the sort of thing that would happen, by the way, if you were out of time, they would put you on a charge, you see. And I never went on one because I was never on a charge right the way through my army career. Never did get in any trouble at all. But the fact is that a number of them did. But what they would do would be they'd have to get up at up past five, and they'd have to double round the square, which was a huge thing, before everybody else got up, which was at 6:30 or whatever it was, I think 6 o'clock, 6:30, and then they would then join in the day's training. And then often they'd have to do some more at night time as well. Don't forget, we also had to do guard duty. I think we were on guard duty about two or three times a week, which I found very difficult to stay awake and do that sort of thing, because you're in dead trouble if you fell asleep. But the point was that, if I may say so, the thing that I can remember was that it was reputed, and I know it was true really, that in the lavatories, in the stalls, the brasswork was all polished, you see, and particularly the actual waste was polished, and apparently the sergeants would take a keen delight in going along and spending a penny, and then the bloke would have to immediately get down and clean it up again. There's the old saying, if it moves, salute it, if it doesn't move, paint it, and that's what we had to do all the time.
So apart from being sort of treated this way, what were you taught?
Ah, well, the actual teaching, of course, then assumed a different thing altogether. Primarily, of course, there was a long period of drill. It was basically drill. We didn't understand why we had to have so much drill, but we did. The other thing was, of course, physical training. And we had to run very often on the road where the tanks were flying about up and down the hill, which they did, in the muddy conditions. And if you stood on parade and in your PT kit, And suddenly there'd be dirty flesh, was the great thing they called out at the top of their voice, because you've got spots of mud on your on the backside of your elbow where you wouldn't be able to see it, but they'd see it, of course, and you were on a charge for that dirty flesh. So what you learnt to do, of course, was after you'd been there, you just rubbed your arms like that as quick as you could. I mean, it became, you learnt the parts of your of what to do, but you had to learn how to do it. But they were absolutely ruthless, and there was no doubt about it.